Hi, welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro, and you wonder, is the Fed really going to start increasing their long bond purchases? Yes, they are. We've got that. Are producer prices going to lead to massive inflation? With the CPI coming next week, a lot of people think so. We'll take a look at that. We've got credit data. Is the surge in credit card spending leading to a broad increase? Or are we still in a nasty credit contraction that's probably only going to get worse? We've got unemployment data, economic data. Let's just get right into our headline story. And the Fed has announced from their market desk changes to the QE program. Now, they're going to show you their slight changes. Let's talk about this. So this is from Lori Logan, the executive vice president. She is the head of the market desk. And let's go down here. This posted yesterday, April 8th. On the Fed's website, New York Fed. So here we go. She says, today, I would like to share some thoughts on how we have returned to normal operation. No, that's not what I was looking for. Here, I would like to discuss a few changes we have made or planning in the desk treasury, agents MBS, and agency CMBS operations to help us adhere to these guiding principles. Oh, well, that's excellent. So let's get into the treasury purchase operations. Now, Just so we understand what's going on here, let's just go through this whole thing. So last March, when conditions were highly disruptive in the U.S. Treasury market, we purchased a wide range of securities because we didn't know what we were doing, so we just bought a whole bunch of stuff. To address the broad market dysfunction at times, we weighted purchases more heavily towards sectors in which conditions were especially strained, which means we still bought more stuff not knowing what we were doing. Adjustments were made to the size and composition of purchases were announced in the tech desk. The desk purchase calendars often released multiple times a week, and yes, they were at the time. As market conditions stabilized, we adjusted purchase allocations to be roughly proportional to amounts outstanding across the nominal treasury coupon tips curves. I'm not so sure about that. And we lengthened the purchase calendars to provide more predictability in our planned operation, meaning we took the same schedule that we were repeating every 2 weeks, and we gave it to you over a month. By the way, the schedule renews on Tuesday. There's no QE purchase next Tuesday. Monday is the last day of this current schedule, so we'll get see what happens on the macro show on Wednesday when we take a look at that. As our treasury purchases transitioned to a more proportional allocation, there were still sectors of the curve that we refrained from purchasing. For example, the desk has generally avoided purchasing T-bills, mainly because we caused a liquidity crisis by taking out all the pristine collateral in the system and the banks got really mad. And that was March of last year, so our bad. Both to avoid increasing scarcity value in these securities arising from strong investor demand and because bill purchases have relatively little impact on financial conditions. It's a good thing the Fed is just figuring this out now. All right, so here we go. Even in steadier operating regime, that means now, we continue to adjust our purchase approach consistent with our principles, which are, we don't know what we're doing, but we're going to do a bunch of stuff anyways. For example, we conduct periodic reviews of our allocation across purchase sectors to make modest changes in response to evolving market environment. Okay, sure. During the past year, issuance of treasury securities has increased markedly as the U.S. Treasury has fought to fund pandemic-related fiscal stimulus expenditures. Clearly, the Fed is just figuring this out. Even with this new issuance, the distribution of treasury coupons outstanding has been fairly stable, given the large outstanding stock and treasury debt. However, modest shifts have occurred. In particular, the introduction of the 20-year treasury bond has increased the amount outstanding, which is amazing that, again, we're just discussing this now, around the 20-year maturity point. In addition, the pace of increase in TIPS issuance has been slower relative to nominal coupon securities. Now, let me explain that part. So if we look at the monthly auctions, which I do, there's one TIPS auction. There's like 5, a 10, and a 30-year TIPS. And you get one of the three a month, and they kind of rotate through. The primary dealer banks have been taking about $1.5 billion. And just so you have some context of this, the Fed has been buying $2.5 billion. We'll discuss this in a little bit. I just wanted to give you kind of the picture of what they're talking about here. With net issuance expected to remain high in the near term, because we're borrowing our brains out, we anticipate the composition of outstanding supply will continue to evolve. As a result, we plan to make minor technical adjustments to our purchase sectors. Okay, so what does minor adjustments mean? If they were just to scale back on their TIPS purchases, say from $2.5 billion down to $500 million, and I have no idea what they're going to do, you're talking 2.5% out of an $80 billion per month purchase schedule of what QE is doing. In the Fed's mind, that is absolutely that is small. Now, if it goes to purchase more long bonds, hey, I'm all for it. So let's see what they're going to do and increase the frequency at which we update purchase allocation. So what they're going to do is they're going to make minor technical adjustments to purchase sectors, translating, we're going to buy more long bonds because, hey, we just told you we got problems with the 20-year, and increase the frequency at which we update our allocations to remain roughly proportional to the outstanding supply of nominal coupon securities and TIPS. So there you go. Because there isn't as demand for TIPS in terms of new issuance, they're going to have to go where there is and where they're having problems in the auctions. So we expect to announce these as part of a normal purchase calendar in coming months. So is this the Fed kind of announcing that, like, hey, we realize that, like, we don't know what we're doing and we're buying a bunch of stuff and we're causing potentially some problems, and we're finally now acknowledging there's issues with these treasury auctions that are because of their increased size, that maybe there isn't quite that demand there. We need to kind of make some adjustments, but we can't go over the $80 billion because that'll look bad. We said we're not going to do that. But maybe we can massage just how this is going to look. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's the reason why, but they're going to have to purchase more long bonds, and they know it. And this is good news because of the massive short position on the long bond. Of course, we'll look at that on Monday when we review how the speculative positions are. But what has this been from the other picture is, because of the Fed's demand for TIPS, it's created this inflation expectation. So here, let's look at chart of TIP, TIP. This is the TIPS ETF, the largest, maybe the only one, I don't know. It's definitely the largest one. And so inflation expectations go up when the value of TIPS, or Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, go up. And it's believed that that this has gone up mainly due to the Fed overpurchasing. Now, some people, you probably have read about and heard about, believe it was a deliberate act to, even though this doesn't create inflation, it creates the illusion of inflation. And now all of a sudden we're seeing kind of a potential topping pattern here. And could that be a great article for an upcoming issue for Momentum Time Pro? It could. In fact, it should. And I want to thank all of you for your feedback on that. Some of you have some really great suggestions on how to make it more readable, and just all the positive comments, I appreciate it. There'll be lots more free episodes coming, issues coming, so don't worry about that. So far, I've had some suggestions to kind of look at a historical of UUP to see how well it did at timing bottoms. So we got that, maybe to cover the euro. So I think a symbol FXE. Maybe now we can add TIPS to that to see if there's something here in terms of, if you're playing the short side of it. That's kind of the whole idea of what Momentum Timer Pro was intended to be. So anyways, you see here potential topping pattern. Does that mean that inflation expectations, just by a minor adjustment to the Fed's purchase program, could send this down if there's no further support? Maybe there is no support here. We don't know because the Fed's been buying so much of it. All right, let's get back to the slides. Where are they? There we go. All right, back to the economic data. So let's go to yesterday. We have initial jobless claims, and let's go to the news release, the official from the Department of Labor. And we'll zoom this in a little bit so you can see it. And what did we have? Initial claims. Remember, last week, 728,000. Back over 700,000. This week, 744,000. And look, this really troubles me because we just got that big non-farm payroll report that had 1 million, and then it was like, maybe due to the seasonal adjustments, only really 650. But you're getting this hammering of 700,000. I mean, we dipped below, but our average is still over 700,000 unemployment claims a week. Now, what is that telling you from an economic perspective? Well, here's what it tells me. People are going back to work, obviously. And then what's happening? Some of them are not keeping their jobs. It's like a revolving door. Now, why would that be? Maybe demand isn't there. Another factor that I don't think is getting a lot of attention, and it will, is productivity has gone up. And why is that? Well, during the pandemic, during the shutdown, what did a lot of businesses do? Well, they had to automate to deal with the changes that were coming in the world due to a pandemic. So they had to find new ways to do things. And that meant get rid of employees and put computerized devices or smartphone apps or other things in place to automate their business. Well, when you automate, you don't need as many employees. And even worse, if there isn't a strong demand, as a lot of businesses were told we're going to have, well, maybe they're finding out that these employees don't have enough work to do, or maybe their core workforce, because of their increases in productivity, are so efficient that they don't need as many employees. So that's a problem, because we should not be seeing this number over 700,000. It tells you there's a structural problem. This number should be probably under 200,000 or below 300,000, just to show that, yes, there's some labor turnover that occurs in the natural function of the workforce, but there are people that are getting their jobs and keeping their jobs. What this is telling you is they're going back to work, and at some point they're back on unemployment, and that is not healthy for an economic recovery. How about the total claims, including all pandemic, form of pandemic assistance, down by 50,000 to 18 point, round up 2 million people still on some form of unemployment assistance. Not good at all. Now let's go back to the auctions here. We had a 4-week and 8-week bill. Look at that, is 0.01% for both of them, which tells you there's a massive demand for T-bills. And that is not a sign of inflation when short-term yields are falling. Let's head over to China. And what do we have here? Consumer price index month over month went negative 0.5%. So that is a deflationary month over month print. Yeah, now the year over year went from deflation minus 0.2 to plus 0.4. We're going to see some of this in the base effects due to shutdowns around the world, where CPI on the year over year is going to run a little higher, while you're going to see the month over month slow down due to the disinflationary forces going on in the global economy. Producer prices in China shot up from 1.7 to 4.4, but you notice producer prices didn't get passed over to consumer prices, and that is the most important thing. It's called a margin squeeze. How about in Germany? Exports up in February and imports way up 3.6%. So I don't know what's going on in Germany, but a lot of imports are flowing there. Maybe because the economy, parts of the economy throughout Europe are shut down. I don't know. But a huge amount of imports there. Industrial production month over month down 1.6%. This is kind of in February, despite what we're seeing is these very strong purchasing manager reports saying things are great there, but industrial production was down 1.6% in February. Let's see what else we have. French industrial production down 4.7% in February. This is not exactly what you're looking for in an inflationary environment. Spanish industrial production down 2.1%. year over year in February, slight improvement over the previous month. Retail sales in Italy, boom, up 6.6 in February, but year over year still negative at 5.7%. It's clearly not enough financial support coming out of the governments like they're doing here in the US. Let's take a look at today's producer price index, because there's a lot of questions here that come up of this has to be inflationary. We're gonna address that. So producer prices went up month over month from 0.5% to 1%, bringing the year-over-year changes shot higher from 2.8 to 4.2. How about core, excluding food and energy? Well, now you see a little bit difference. The core was only up 0.5% to plus 0.7. Year-over-year was only up slightly from 2.5 to 3.1, telling you that the most of what's going on in the producer price index is, guess what, due to commodity prices. Let's take a look at some charts. So here is the producer price index versus the consumer price index. So what you're gonna hear going into the CPI print next week is that the consumer prices are gonna go straight up. I mean, we should see, if you look at this big move in producer prices way up here, I mean, you're talking a potential 3+ print on the year over year in the CPI. Does that always happen? Well, not so much. You can see there's plenty of times where, I forgot to turn tool tips off, where the PPI is just racing higher, but the CPI really isn't. And so you can see that occurs in several different places here. Even back in 2018, the producer prices were relatively high, but it didn't continue to drive consumer prices up very much. So does this mean that consumer prices are going up because producer prices? It does not at all. That you can't really make that argument unless consumers can afford the higher prices. So let's take out food and energy, because this gets more interesting. Now I'm running over the same time scales here. So here's PPI, excluding food and energy, in blue, consumer. CPI, excluding food and energy, in red. And here you can see going into the great financial crisis, producer prices rose, but consumer prices fell. Now, what does that mean? You know, I want you to think about, what does it mean when you see producer prices rising and consumer prices falling? It means consumers can't afford them. They're rejecting those higher prices. And so when we're looking for liquidity traps, we should be able to see them here. So let's go and zoom back into this data and see if we can identify some liquidity traps. And look, we have to go to the 2008 data. And here we can see, okay, both of them went down, both of them went up. And here's, you know, here's consumer prices rising, producer prices didn't. And here they are. Well, so not a lot of sign of the liquidity trap in here, because here we saw higher consumer prices, but we didn't see that. But look, and then producer prices went up and consumer prices went down. But here we see that producer prices were leading the way lower, excluding food and energy. And now we can see very clearly that liquidity trap, where consumer prices are headed down, producer prices have been headed up. And you can see that going on since September, where consumers are just rejecting higher prices. They cannot afford it, because in a liquidity trap, there's only so much money going around. And well, if there's not enough money going around, prices have to fall somewhere. Remember, there's that gap between the demand for money and the money supply, and it has to be closed by declining consumer prices somewhere in the system. So if you get higher consumer prices, say due to food and energy, that means you're going to get lower core, because it has to be offset. It must be offset. That gap must be filled. And if you missed that, check out the Macro Voices interview. If you need the links to that, I have them. Just send me an email. All right, how about the producer price index versus 30-year treasury yields? Okay, this is it, right? Well, producer prices are going up. They have to be inflationary. And well, you don't see that either. There are plenty of times here you see great financial crisis, producer prices in blue. Here, I'll turn off the tool tips so we can see that. Apologize. Here you go, tool tips off. And boom, here you see producer prices rising, treasury yields fell. Now, what does that tell you here? Producer prices rise, treasury yields fell. Producer prices are rising, treasury yields flat. So what does it tell you? Right, so if yields are not going, or if yields are going up with producer prices, what does it tell you? It's inflationary, right? Because if prices of out of the factory are rising, and interest rates are going up with it, what is that giving you an indication? That there is plenty of money out in the economy, and that that money is going out and chasing down and able to absorb higher prices. But what happens when you have higher producer prices and you have either flat or declining interest rates? Well, it tells you that there's a liquidity trap and that people cannot afford those higher prices. Now, I know you're going to say, okay, well, right now we're seeing both of them go up. Well, this move in treasury yields has been very speculative, as we know, and is going to get unwound. And so even before, we've seen places where yields backed up a little bit and then went down. We see yields backing up here before they went down. So can producer prices continue to rise? Yes. Are they likely to? Probably not a whole lot more, because of the relationship with, you know, the strong relationship this has with energy prices and with the dollar. So no real relationship here at all to worry about. How about this chart from Charlie Bilello? I apologize, Charlie. This is the percentage of stocks above their 200-day moving average of the S&P 500. And he's saying most since October 2009. So, of course, this means that the market is massively overvalued. All right, let's take a look at the assets and liabilities of all commercial banks. Interesting stuff here. Bank credit shrank by $8 billion. Securities in bank credit were up $5 billion, but mostly due to mortgage-backed securities that were up $12 billion, whereas U.S. Treasuries were down $9 billion. So if banks shed a little bit of Treasury securities last week, and yields didn't skyrocket because, well, We'll look at that. Well, you're going to see right now, but we'll look at the chart. What happened? Loans and leases down $13 billion. There's no demand for credit. So what is that telling you? Rates are too high. Real estate loans down $4 billion. Consumer loans up $7 billion. So we do know that consumer loans were up because we saw the consumer credit report. Now, for those of you who are confused by that consumer credit report, if that was all banks. This is just commercial banks. So this is just the large commercial banks. That other report will include all banks. So keep that in mind. Consumer loans, again, up $7 billion. Credit cards, let's see, where did they were up. Wow, looks like $5 billion there. Cash assets, so cash at banks, big decline, $137 billion. So money is clearly being spent. And I'm sure the Fed appreciates that. But guess what the Fed needs to do? They're doing QE. They need those cash assets to rise. All right, let's hit the PowerPoints real quick. We got real estate loan growth up to minus 0.52%. So still contraction. You'll notice that when this thing contracts, well, it normally doesn't lead to higher interest rates. I mean, you see it here, but then they get, when is it in contraction? Blue here. I had them backwards. I was looking backwards here. Blue is in contraction. Oh, yields can back up, but then they go back down. And here you see blue briefly contracting, yields trying to go up. No, they have to go down. Why do yields have to go down? To spur credit growth. How about commercial industrial loans tanking at minus 8.21%? I think it was only off by this. I said at the end of March, this would go negative, and here we are now into April, and minus 5%, 5.35 on the six-month rate change. This is going to go further negative, no doubt about that. How about loans and leases, all bank credit, down minus 3.29% from a year ago. There's your credit contraction. This puts a negative pressure on, or downward pressure on the money supply. This is not good. Tells you rates are too high. But we do see some improvement in consumer loans. Finally, here's the credit card growth rate up to minus 9.6% from a year ago. We'll notate that is entirely due to the effects of stimulus checks, which we know are, of course, going to be transitory. All right. Well, that's our episode for today. Appreciate you being fans. Appreciate you watching. What we have coming on deck, we'll have the Sunday chart show. Monday, the macro show. We've got the Hoisington investment management piece to do. That just came out from Dr. Lacey Hunt. We'll need to do a review on that. I've got some issues on Momentum Timer Pro. So I think it's going to be a busy week for us next week. So be sure to tune in. Again, thanks for subscribing. Thanks for liking. And again, it's my turn to give back. Hope you enjoy all the stuff that I want to give back to you, because you've supported me for so long and been wonderful, wonderful fans. Thank you. Have a great weekend. See you on Sunday. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. It's not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by selling security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter on personal capacity. Opinions expressed this video that are do not reflect the Atlas Financial Advisor Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.